Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
The most expensive beer in history.
People will turn around to me and say, oh, I'm just making gin while I wait for my whiskey to get ready.
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
They kind of look at it as a novelty more than anything. The guy from the rock bands is making wine.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. With a background in sensory science, Carly Small began her brewing career in Australia as a lab technician at West End Brewery in Adelaide. She held a series of brewing roles at West End before relocating to North America, where she was hired by Bell's Brewery, the Michigan-based company behind Two Hearted IPA, which was voted the best beer in America 4 years running. Carly spent almost 5 years at Bell's, finishing as brewing manager in September 2019. She's back in Australia now, based in Sydney, as head brewer and production manager at one of my locals, the Grifter Brewing Company. In this interview that's coming up in just a moment, I started by asking Carly how it was that she found her way from Michigan to Marrickville.
So the intent was to always come back to Australia, but via Central and South America. Landed in Sydney in February of 2020, and I think we all know how 2020 went.
So yeah, it wasn't part of the plan necessarily to move back to Australia for good.
No, but to be completely honest, I'm actually not much of a planner in general. So when I got back to Australia, I didn't actually have a plan of what I wanted to do next. So I guess in that, COVID actually helped shape the next plan. And yeah, I always like to just keep it open, like to see how, you know, if something came up here or something came up overseas. And I was seriously considering doing some more travel because I guess the world is such a big place that, you know, there's always more to see. But yeah, spending some extra time in South Australia, coming back to Sydney as well, like just seeing how the beer market had changed, I became really passionate about being a part of the Australian beer market and, you know, helping it grow. Like, the US is just an insane scene as far as craft brewing goes. So there's great things happening here, but I also see how much potential there still is in Australia.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you were in South Australia. Were you thinking at all of getting a brewing job down there, or, you know, once COVID made the decision that you were going to be in Australia for a while, did you sort of have your heart set on going back to Sydney for a change?
Yeah, I think because I started my brewing career in Australia, so I worked at West End for a while. And even though, yeah, there's some amazing stuff happening in South Australia, I was very excited about what was happening in Sydney and particularly the, you know, West beer scene. I'd only been to Grifter Brewing once before, many years ago, on a beer tour, on a visit back from the US. And I just got a really cool vibe from it. I think it's important to choose somewhere where, you know, it's your work. Like, I do believe that we need to enjoy where we work as well. And I saw that Grifter were hiring for a brewer on Crafty Pint. So I just reached out and just said, hey, like, this is me. Let me know if you think that there's anything that, you know, could be a potential for me. And then they actually called me a couple of weeks later and said, and interestingly, a head brewer is off for a tree change. Are you still looking for work? And here I am now.
And yeah, I mean, you would have been a very attractive hire because you've got a pretty impressive CV. You know, I guess starting out, as you mentioned, in your brewing career at West End at a big brewery, kind of having that discipline behind you. But then tell me about your time at Bell's, brewer of the number one craft beer as voted by the American Home Brewers Association, isn't it?
Yeah. So that was a huge deal when it came through. So yeah, Bell's Two Hearted IPA, which is an absolutely delicious beer. Yeah, forever it was Pliny the Elder that had taken that top spot. And I think, yeah, Bell's Two Hearted is actually still number one, which is cool.
And that must have been not that long after you got there that Pliny got knocked off its perch by Bell's Two Hearted.
Yeah, it was a couple of years in, actually. It was, so when I was brewing manager at the time. So yeah, I'd been at Bell's for a couple of years before that one came through. And it was really funny. Pliny were very good about it. They sent us a case and, like, you know, keeping that, because I think, you know, in brewing, the industry is super small and it is really friendly.
Even in the US.
Yeah. I did, now realising, yeah, the differences in scale and the magnitudes.
How big are they in an American craft brewing context?
When I was there, and it keeps changing, like, as far as craft goes as to who buys who at the moment, but they were the seventh largest craft brewery in the US. So I think, like, you know, roughly about, like, 60 million litres.
And those are the kind of numbers that blow people's minds in Australia, because when you think that, you know, Coopers is 80 million litres, Stone and Wood is, I haven't got the latest data, but maybe 15 million or something. And so there you go, there's Bell's is 4 times our biggest sort of small independent craft brewer.
So huge in Michigan. But even when I left, they were only in about half of the USA. So there was certainly, you know, a lot of breweries at that size were, you know, the hot, like, nationwide, and even exporting.
We don't hear a lot about Michigan as being a craft beer area in the US. You know, you hear a lot about Portland and San Diego and Colorado and places like this. What's the beer scene like in Michigan generally?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I think I was so blown away by it. So there's Bell's in Michigan, but I don't know if you've heard of Founders Brewing.
Of course,
yeah. That's in Michigan as well. But I know it's similar to everywhere in the US now, that every town seems to have 5 local breweries. So I think one of my favourite beer moments over there was when I walked into a local little craft brewery in the town that I lived. And it was in an old converted funeral home, and they specialise in Belgian sours. And it was
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's like something I would expect in Portland.
Yeah.
You know, kind of eccentric, you know, weird. Yeah.
And it was, there's so many stories like that in Michigan, and it's just, you know, people just have such love for beer.
And, you know, obviously your background up until joining Bell's had been, you know, your brewing background had been at West End, obviously making, you know, some more sort of macro beers down there, although West End might have brewed some craftier styles as well. You can clear that up for me. But had you already sort of developed a palate for craft beer, and were you a craft beer enthusiast by the time you worked at Bell's?
Yeah, I wouldn't. So at the time, like, yeah, there were some pretty good craft beers. It wasn't nothing compared to the US at that time, in my opinion. Mm. And it's come so far now.
Do you just mean the scene in Adelaide generally?
Yeah, I think we're just starting, and everyone's like, oh, you know, this is like a cool thing, and people are just starting to get into it. But even, like, so West End is not a craft beer, but it was using, you know, sound brewing practices. So, you know, 100% malt and kettle hops and, you know, all of that stuff. So I think, you know, when we talk about craft, and you know, probably a lot's changed, I've been out of it for a little bit now. But I think, you know, keeping that love of raw materials can be quite consistent no matter whether you call it craft or mainstream.
And also, yeah, I mean, you know, Southwark Stout is a pretty beautiful beer, which can probably sit alongside some crafty stouts as well.
Yeah, Southwark Stout will always be one of my favourite beers. It's so delicious. And, yeah, it's beer, like, you know, and it's whatever you call it, craft or not, but, yeah, it's delicious beer.
What about sort of, you know, as we discussed, two-hearted IPA, really hop-driven beer? Had you had much exposure to those American IPAs before you went to the States?
Not to the extremes and not to the levels. I think Americans love to do everything to extreme. And, yeah, just the amount of hops that were going into those beers is just crazy. And now normal. I couldn't imagine anything else now. And I think, though, the one thing that really stood out is just how sound all the quality processes were. You know, just the storage of the hops, the oxygen control. And I think that was really eye-opening. I think, you know, a lot of people Australia was, you know, we're great at brewing lagers. And then, you know, the craft brewing shift has actually really changed. And, you know, we're diving deeper into all of those quality metrics to have delicious IPA. And to me, that was, you know, something that I really enjoyed learning over there, in addition to the raw materials. So Bell's has such a strict protocol on, you know, testing and making sure the raw materials are at great quality and actually, like, you know, hand selecting as well. So I think, you know, just that the love of the raw material makes delicious beer, but also developing, like, great relationships with the farmers and the suppliers and all of that stuff.
And do you kind of remember your earliest drinking experiences with some of those big hoppy IPAs over there and what your impressions of them were?
I think they're just so smooth, like so many hops, but they just balance perfectly. And
the good ones anyway.
I mean,
there are obviously bad examples over there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. But when, you know, when they've got all the quality, you know, the oxygen, it's not old, you know, it's just, it's so smooth, and the body's there. There's so much bitterness, but it's like balanced perfectly with the hop character. And then the thing that I just had no idea about was the alcohol. Like, they're so strong in alcohol, but you'd have absolutely no idea. Even, you know, to the point where I'd have, like, you know, I'd wake up feeling like not a little bit thirsty or whatever, and I'd be like, well, I only had a couple of beers. But then you look at the ABV of the beers that you're drinking, and he just, yeah, like, I was used to 4.5%, like 5% Australian lagers. They very much, though, I think, understand the effects of alcohol as far as, like, what that actually gives to the body of an IPA. The key to those beers is actually, you know, keeping that body there so that it doesn't stick out, or, you know, it's very balanced and easy drinking.
You told me about Oberon. So what kind of beer style is that, and what are some of the other beers at Bell's that you most, you know, appreciated when you were there?
Yeah, so Oberon is like an American wheat beer. Yeah, not at all like a German-style wheat beer. And when Oberon was released to the market, that was the sign of summer, because Michigan is so cold, and the winters are so long, so that whenever you see, like, the Oberon come out, you know that, you know, summer is on its way. And then Two Hearted, I think, is, like I said, it's a delicious beer, and they're really clever in tapping into that IPA market. It was there ready to go, and that is the beer that everyone wants with the, you know, the best beer in the USA. And that's been great, I think, for them to get into other beer markets. I think one beer that I was very, very passionate about was lager. I just, you know, felt that being an Australian, like, you know, you have to make a good lager. So that was something that I really took to heart and, yeah, enjoyed doing.
What kind of styles of lager are we talking?
It was just like a, you know, like quite a... There was a range, so, you know, just a normal traditional lager as to what you would find in Australia. But Bell's, we also did like an Oktoberfest and like a dry hopped lager. All are very delicious.
What else were they known for there? You know, did they have a barrel program? Did they jump on the whole haze craze thing of recent years?
Yeah, the haze craze. Yeah, so there was quite a big barrel program, so not huge in relation to other breweries in the US, but a well-known barrel beer that Bell's would do is called Black Note. So your standard, like, barrel-aged, bourbon barrel-aged beer. The, like, hazy was kind of, you know, coming towards, like, the end of my time at Bell's. So that's interesting, trying to create a hazy beer that's shipped to half of the US. And
that would have made Bell's a bit of a late adopter then of that trend if they hadn't done it until towards the end of your tenure, I guess. Was there some kind of staunch resistance to doing it?
Or? Yeah, I think even personally, like, I just, you know, you think, oh, like, it just won't last, it won't last. And then one of, like, I went on a holiday to Massachusetts and went to Treehouse Brewing, that I think is, you know, up there with one of the best hazy IPA breweries. And going there and then, you know, waiting in line for an obscene amount of time to get your allocation of 2 6-packs, because that's all you're allowed to get. and tasting their hazy IPA and was just amazing. I wasn't a believer. And then I realized that I hadn't actually had good ones or good examples. And I really do like the style. And from a brewing point of view, they are really hard to make. Like, you know, all of my brewing studies has been about how to get the haze out of beer. And then, you know, even going to their MBAA meetings in the US, it all flipped and it turned to, you know, how to... Master Brewers of the Americas.
Right.
And, yeah, all of the technical papers and presentations suddenly become on how to get stable haze in beers and, you know, analysing all of that. And that was really cool to see that change and see the evolution. So, yeah, when that style is good, it is good. I enjoy it. So it really is just about the perfect balance. So... the zero bitterness, but the juicy, fruity characters. Has the full mouthfeel, but it doesn't have that yeast or tolosos or yeast bite in there because the haze isn't driven from yeast. So I think it was just a real sensory experience of, like, you, in some ways you feel like you're drinking orange juice and, you know, in other ways you're like, you know, that this is beer, and you just had the full spectrum of the mouthfeel and, yeah, the hops and all of it going on.
Any other, you know, amazing beer experiences that you had in your time in the US? You know, you mentioned you did get the opportunity to go to Hop Harvest while you were over there, did you?
No, I didn't actually. Yeah, but just even, but I did head out to Yakima, not during harvest, and just like seeing the volume of the hop fields and just even Michigan like had quite a big hop scene, and I don't think we get Michigan hops in Australia. But
I've never heard of them. It's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, so you go up to northern Michigan, and once again, like there's beautiful hop fields up there,
and good quality hops as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like we used them a little bit at Bell's Brewery. It's just the volumes weren't there, but so most of ours came from Yakima. Probably shouldn't say that. But I know that there was a lot of, you know, in the US and I guess in Australia, like everything moved towards like that really hyper-local model. So there's a lot of, in Michigan, there was a lot of breweries that would buy just Michigan hops. And even there was like a few boutique malt houses in Michigan, which were also like perfect to visit. So I've only ever seen like really large scale malt houses. Even when I was at uni, like I did a small stint working in one in Adelaide. And then to see like this, you know, on a farm where they grow the barley and they actually then take it over to the shed and they've got these like beautiful, like, you know, just like, you know, their kilns and everything where they make their own malt. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. Now, maybe take us back to, like, you know, when you did study at uni, you did a science degree originally. Was there ever a, you know, did you have the idea in your head that you would be brewing at some stage by then, or how did that happen?
Yeah, not at all. So really, I guess, not the typical craft beer history, but I had a love of sensory science. And then so after I finished my science degree or food science degree, I did a little stint in a flavour house and just loved flavours. So that's what attracted me into the brewing world. And
what is a flavour house? You know, what do they actually do?
So in all the, you know, when you turn over at your lollies and you look at the ingredient lists and then you see the added flavours. Everything that, you know, that says like natural flavours or added flavours is from a flavour house, or like your chips and seasonings and your snack foods and all of that stuff. I really enjoyed working in the flavour house and definitely continued my love of sensory science into the brewing world.
Did you just see the brewing opportunity come up and think that your background was suited to it?
Yeah, I also, so in addition to sensory science, I also loved microbiology. And I was pretty, I think it's pretty inspiring that when you look at fermentation and, you know, a lot of the sensory is driven by yeast and fermentation and, you know, or spoilage bacteria, all of that stuff. So I really enjoyed marrying the sensory science with the the microbiology and the science nerd in me. Western will always have a place in my heart. I was there for quite a number of years, and I wouldn't be into beer if it wasn't for going there. I was into the science side, not necessarily into the brewing side. But then after being exposed to the brewing side and then doing my brewing studies, like, I really fell in love with the industry. So, yeah, very enjoyed my time at West End. I keep thinking one of my last projects that I did before I left West End was putting in the new, like, cross-flow filters and upgrading the cellars and stuff. And I'm like, oh, what's going to happen to them? But I'm sure they'll go to a good home.
Have they actually finished operations yet? Or
I don't think so.
No.
I'm not 100% sure.
Not quite yet. Yeah. Talk to me about your time at Grifter. How have you settled in there? Because it's been about 6 months now.
Yeah, I'd only been to Grifter once before starting my first day. And it was all over COVID, so there was, like, travel bans and everything. So I didn't even... Everything was over Zoom and whatnot. So it has been an interesting time to move during COVID, and I'm really keen to see, like, what happens in the Inner West beer scene post-COVID. So, like, when all the beer festivals and all of that return. I'm really enjoying it. And personally, like, something that I'm really enjoying currently is, getting back to those raw materials and getting into the recipe development and exploring, the hops here and the malts that we have and putting them into good use into a delicious beer.
It must be different from a scale point of view working at Grifter versus, working at Bell's, from what you've told me about the size of Bell's.
Yeah, it absolutely is. But the good thing about beer is that it's, it is all just all brewing. And I think something that I'm really excited about is when I first got to Bell's, like, they were going through an insane amount of growth. And it's pretty cool to be, like, at the size and at the level that we're at, and then seeing, putting these systems in place and building on it to, set us up for whatever the next steps are.
And what are the next steps?
Well, I think right at the moment is just, just maximising. So we're brewing the most beer that we ever have at Grifter. So really just maximising the current space and seeing what we can get out of it. Something I'm also really enjoying is looking at the lineup of beers. And so, in the US and at Bell's, like, it was... very seasonal based. And I think even when I started here, like, I would think, like, oh, okay, this beer, like, you have to time it because, it's, like, very strict. Like, if Americans, like, they don't want a pumpkin beer at this date, but they do want it at this date, or, like, over on, you don't want to drink that in winter. So you have to, like time it seamlessly, otherwise it doesn't sell. At Grifter, it's been cool to, like, start looking at, the seasonal offerings and, just looking at that lineup and, saying, is this the lineup for us, and do we want to put some of those seasonal beers in?
I don't want to ask you to name, who your favourite children are in the range, but which are your favourite Grifter beers?
Oh, I couldn't come back from the US and not say that Big Sur is my favourite. I do very much enjoy, like, a hoppy beer. I think as well, so we have a tank that we quite often turn around with new beers. So that's pretty exciting to, develop a new recipe and put out a new beer on a regular basis and try that. So I think there's some good stuff coming out of that, which I enjoy drinking.
And I think last time I was in there with an XPA that I had that was new to me, and some kind of hazy creation as well.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
I thought they were both good, yeah.
Yeah, so the XPA is in Cairns, and that's it's new to me, but I think this is the second summer that it was running for. And, yeah, so the hazy was just that little fun tank that we were playing with.
And is that you? Was that your... recipe and kind of experimentation?
Yeah, I always like to say it's the team. Yeah. That's certainly been one that's that we've developed while I've been there. I think, Like, for me, I enjoy working in the background on things. So getting those, you know, working on the quality and brewing processes and all of that stuff. So that's what I enjoy doing. And then we'll let these creative minds at it with the releases and all of that.
And did Grifter have a lab and that kind of quality program in place when you arrived?
Yeah, it's pretty very much evolving. So that's something that I am excited to work on, is to, you know, bring that. You know, there's a lot of, when you start as a little craft brewery, you don't need, you know, you just, it's about delicious beer. So I think you can absolutely achieve delicious beer without a lab. But it's cool to, like, put the science there, and it's even like a little sense of security, like when you can measure things and actually see what it's at rather than tasting for bitterness or colour or all of that stuff.
Carly, it's been really awesome having a chat and hearing a bit about your career and what's going on at Grifter. So thanks so much for joining us on the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson, like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.